This is an example of speech.
All our history.
Welcome to Tell Me What to Think, a free from oversight and free of charge, thoughtfully improvised, expletive deleted, details expanded whistle, blow hard evergreen topical heat wave of a weekly conversation turned podcast, in which we discuss politics, global affairs, current events, music, literature, social media, and anything else that bubbles up from the unmoderated comment section in our brains. We urge you to join us and tell us what you think. I'm Peter Elbro. You can contact me on Twitter at BloatedNemesis, and I have with me, as always and forever, Charles Minnick, who is on Twitter at Green_Weird, W-Y-R-D. This episode, we have our weekly intro, Week Thoughts, in which we discuss violence in Gaza and new National Security Advisor John Bolton, a grown-up book report of Congressman and civil rights legend John Lewis's autobiographical series of graphic novels, March, and some updates on America's PAC in Wisconsin and Syria. Prepare to get royally revolutionary. This is Tell Me What to Think. Time to get on our soap pod and tell you what to think. Now, for some weak thoughts.
Those who benefit never ask why. Just sit back and enjoy some cocoa beans. And don't wonder what profit really means. Those dictates from the ivory tower. Waste your life in a struggle for power. All men thus reduced to fleas. So fuck it, just do whatever you please.
All right, welcome to Tell Me What to Think. This is our weekly segment called Weak Thoughts. And before we move on with those weak thoughts, we want to remind you to subscribe to the podcast, to download them and listen to them and
comment, retweet,
review, and like, and share.
Burn us on the internet on all of your favorite social media.
Yes, on Google Plus, on MySpace. What was that one from a couple of years ago? There was like, it's the new Facebook.
Oh, what, the one name that was made by those guys at New York University.
Yeah,
it was supposed to be super open. Yeah, I don't think it took off.
Whatever that one is. All right.
Are we just going to dive right into the discussion of Facebook and Zuckerberg on the hot seat today? Or
well, he's, yeah, so we're recording on Tuesday. In a couple hours here, Mark Zuckerberg will be in front of, I believe, a Senate committee. Mm-hmm. Is it the judiciary? I was reading up on it this morning, and then I forgot everything I learned.
I don't even think it mentioned which subcommittee he was going in front of. I think it might be Commerce, but yeah, not really matter. It doesn't really matter.
I saw that they quoted Grassley, which is why I said judiciary, because he's the chairman of that, but I'm sure he's on. Oh yeah, no, it is. He'll appear at a joint hearing conducted by the Senate Judiciary and Commerce Committees on Tuesday, starting at 2:15 Eastern. And the House Energy and Commerce Committee.
So yeah, he's going to be on the hot seat in front of Congress. He's going to have a lot of questions and very few definitive, concrete answers to anything.
Yeah, like,
because at this point, it's a legal strategy, because they're almost certainly going to end up in front of a prosecutor or a civil case.
Yeah, like any other video he's in, interview he's in.
This is me attempting human. 5 second look and turn.
Yeah, he does have a little bit of that. Well, that's why the Social Network, Jesse Eisenberg, played him very like robotic. It was a good portrayal.
I still haven't seen that movie for as much as people are talking about it now.
Yeah, it's a good movie. I don't think it's like required watching or anything, but it's good. Anyway, so yeah, we'll probably talk about Zuckerberg in the coming weeks, and if he, shit himself in front of a Senate committee or anything like that.
I mean, I would assume not.
You assume he won't shit himself?
No. You have to go into one of those with an empty stomach and just plenty of water.
So what's going on in Israel, in Palestine, in both? Well, they're the same.
Well, specifically in recent days, the Gaza Strip and its border with Israel has been in the media because the, I guess, maybe Hamas, maybe not, but there is a Palestinian movement called the March of Return, whereby they've established kind of a, not an Occupy-style camp, but an informal protest camp near the Israeli border.
Okay.
And Israel, finding out about this beforehand, stationed a bunch of sharpshooters, basically snipers, along the border in response. And so these people are protesting along the border. Some of them apparently start throwing tires and flinging rocks. And the Palestinians are responding with drone-deployed chemical smoke, some kind of crowd control. Okay. Like, it's not apparently the typical riot control CS gas that we use, but it's something else that I haven't seen any identification of. Well, it's some kind of chemical deployed from drones. It's like, hovers over the crowd and just releases, like dozens of canisters below.
Jesus.
Yeah. They're also using what they called rubber-coated steel pellets, which are... It's a huge misnomer. Those are just rubber-coated bullets. They can kill somebody if they're hit in the right areas.
Why?
And, of course, live ammunition.
Why would a rubber-coated bullet not kill someone? Is it a different kind of gun?
No, it's fired from the same, like, AR-15s and 5.56 NATO standard weapons, but notionally, if somebody gets hit in, like, the meaty parts, like the chest or something, the flesh and fat will probably impede any injury, because this isn't a penetration weapon, like a bullet, because it's supposed to be just a blunt impact.
Wow.
But if somebody takes that blunt impact to the head, they will probably die.
Yeah. But then you said, yeah, I mean, haven't they just been using...
Yeah, and they've just been using straight-up live ammunition.
Too?
Right. Well, they've got, like, the weird barrier. Like, they won't exactly say how far it is, but there's supposed to be, like, a 100-meter dead man or no-man zone within Palestinian territory, or what is notionally Palestinian territory, away from the Israeli border. And then up to, like, beyond that to 300 meters, there's another zone which farmers can get, like, permitted access to. And, yeah, it's... I keep seeing where journalists are like, we don't understand why there's this particular range. It's like, well, those are the operational, like, distances of an M16 assault rifle.
Mm.
300 meters is its maximum range.
So this is in...
the Gaza Strip along...
Yeah, but it's like, Israel. In... response to the just general situation, or is this specifically because of the U.S. moving an embassy, or the embassy?
I'd say that's probably ratcheted things up a bit.
Okay.
But this is, I mean, it's not like the Gaza Strip hasn't been brutalized for decades.
Yeah.
And this protest is going to continue until Nakba, the day where the Israelis historically pushed the Palestinians out of Palestine.
What is this?
Nakba,
like,
is the Arabic word for a catastrophe. It's about the right of return. This is what, you know, is the prime negotiating point for the or any Palestinian negotiating bloc since, you know, 1948 when the catastrophe happened.
Yeah.
The right for Palestinians to return to their home, because, like, some of these people apparently can, like, literally see their homes from the fence or land that was theirs before all this happened.
In
what is now Israel.
Family. Oh, that's because they've been expanding slowly over...
Well, no, those people that lived there were pushed into the Gaza Strip, and the Sinai also, but, you know, that's kind of changed.
But, I mean, wouldn't most of the people who that happened to be dead by now?
Oh, yeah. This is a historical claim.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not saying it's...
I mean, there are probably some people alive.
That's still important. I'm just trying to differentiate. It's not like some 30-year-old guy like, that's where I grew up, right over there.
No, he grew up in the refugee camp.
But they are doing... don't they, like, sort of slowly expand the boundaries? Israel?
They're doing that in the Golan Heights. Like, they're moving the border. But they couldn't get away with it. Along the Gaza Strip, because it's so built up. They've got a fence and checkpoints along the entire length of the border.
Okay. That makes sense. You got any thoughts on it? To me, this just seems like it's heading for nothing but bad.
Yeah, this is going to be terrible. I think, what is it, Trump moved up the opening of the embassy in Jerusalem to later this summer, if memory serves, like June or July, so...
How is that possible? Aren't they supposed to be building a building?
Yeah, they have to build a building, and with, I'm sure, crazy security measures, but they are foregoing a lot of that, and for the sake of expediency... My understanding.
Are they just going to be doing it out of like a Holiday Inn or something? I mean,
well, they've got the one consulate that's like in Jerusalem, but ironically, it's like on the Palestinian side of the just inside of the Palestinian side of the 1948 line.
I bet those employees in the embassy are like, what the fuck?
Yeah,
like,
that's
where they want us to work.
Yeah,
seems super safe.
Yeah, you can see it on Google Maps on Street View too.
Because I thought this... I mean, do you think he's just pushing that forward for political reasons? Like, domestic political reasons, or...?
Yes, and...
For a win, as he puts it?
Well, and to, as they say, create the facts on the ground. Create a situation that nobody has any... or won't have any chance to respond to. Which is why they've been trying to push for this war with Iran and, you know, wider confrontations in the Middle East.
Yeah. Hmm. Speaking of wider confrontations in the Middle East, John Bolton became National Security Advisor Friday? Was that last Friday?
Yeah, he showed up at the job for the first time on Saturday, apparently eager to get a head start on whatever it is he thinks he's doing. Defending America?
Sure. We'll go with that. I feel as if a hawkish foreign policy does the opposite.
Yeah, it's national security, but all of our troops seem to be everywhere but America.
Yeah. So would he... But he... So if so the president is talking about putting troops on the southern border.
Yeah, 400 troops have shown up. So Scott Walker said he's eager to... have a Wisconsin National Guard participate if they send a mission or a mission order to the State Bureau of the National Guard.
So would that have anything to do with the National Security Advisor?
No, that would be the Homeland Security Advisor who resigned just before we started recording, Tom Bossert.
Okay. Reportedly pushed out by Bolton.
Is that what happened?
Well, April Ryan is reporting John Bolton pushed him out.
I've been trying to find a reason, but does that say why? Was it because he was not hawkish enough? I know
it's just a tweet from her.
God damn it.
And it says just for wanting his own people.
I mean, follow us on Twitter, but damn it if it isn't useless at times.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess give them time to write the story, but, you know, maybe they could write the story faster.
Yeah, I'm going to bet that...
tweet.
Like I was saying in our production meeting, like, his appointments are a race to the bottom. When he fires somebody, it's just... you're going to get a categorically less qualified person to replace him.
Well, yeah, you like right before we started recording, you're like, "Oh man, Tom Bossert's out. Who's that?" And you're like, "Okay, this is who he is." And I'm like, "Well, why is this bad?" And yeah, it's just because you know that the next person will be worse. It's we don't even have to know who Tom Bossert is. We don't have to know what terrible things he's probably done.
I mean, he works for the Trump administration, which is an indictment in and of itself, seemingly.
And the next guy will do all the same terrible things and many more.
And incompetently.
At some point, there's a pattern here.
Yeah. At some point.
Like,
the 30 or 40th case is probably indicative, right?
Yeah. There's it's a little hard to quantify this, but some people are trying to statistically look at the job turnover rate within the administration, and it's depending on exactly how you define an administration job, you know,
like political appointees and careers,
yeah. But it's very high. Almost any way you parse the numbers, it's way higher than any other. Mm-hmm. Known presidential administration has been.
Oh, anybody want to get a tour of the White House? Just submit your resume and then get fired when, like, the day after you show up, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, it's, I mean, I kind of feel like these people in a few years are going to be wanting to put that they had a White House job on their resume, but they're going to, like, fudge the dates. So that people won't know it's with Trump's presidency. Somehow, like, just selectively leave the dates of that employment off there. And someone's like, wait, didn't you work for... Oh, no, we're looking for a different candidate.
Yeah, we want somebody who has a track record of success and results.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, depending on... there are results to their action and lack of action, but...
Yeah, there are kind of like two kinds of people in this administration. There's just the utterly inept ones, and then there's the ones who are good at getting bad things done.
And I used to think John Kelly was the latter, but it's looking more and more like the former.
Yeah. Scott Pruitt, I think, is one who's... I think he's pretty good at getting bad things done.
And he's incompetent.
I mean, he's at least well-liked by people who want him to get bad things done, like, you know, the Coke crowd. And
yeah, I'm sure he has a very strong social support network who tells him that what he's doing is right and good for America.
Well, his strong social support network got him an apartment for a few months, didn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's good to have that social safety net where you can depend on other people in times of need.
Yeah. So, the reason I brought up Bolton, though, is there's some, I can't remember now where I saw the article, but there's some thoughts on him having a different view of presidential power than others may have, in that he'd be wanting to expand it.
Oh, yeah, he was in the same clique with Cheney and Addington during Bush 2's administration. Or George II's reign. Like, they want to expand presidential purview and executive authority to ruling by proclamation, ultimately. Like, they want to do whatever they want to do with no consequences and nobody to second-guess them.
And, I mean, they'd probably want that across the board, but the... But specifically for, like, foreign policy, national security.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the way that national security and defense spending has subsumed almost half of our entire federal budget, it's hard to say that it isn't the most important thing that to be talking about, you know? And expanding that is kind of terrifying.
Yeah, but their argument would be, because it's so important, we can't have it bogged down with the whims of Congress. With the whims of this highly elected deliberative body.
It takes months to decide on anything.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I don't know. I mean, the Congress has... It seems like they have no power when it comes to this stuff except giving more and more money to military spending. I mean, but they don't exert any control over like armed conflict.
Right, it's barely worth it. That Yemen resolution barely even got traction on the House or the Senate floor. If Bernie hadn't been behind it, I bet it would never have seen the light of day.
Well, and that was something that was a vote on something that's already going on.
Yeah.
I mean, so there's no way that the administration is going to go to Congress to... Didn't the Obama administration attempt to get congressional approval for one of the military actions?
Was it Libya? Yeah, it was Libya.
I think it might have been Libya.
Yeah, and they got rejected and did it anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes. But yeah, this is one of the reasons Obama never took more of a stringent effort against the Syrian administration, you know, the Assad regime, is that there is no way that you can look at that 2001 authorization for the use of military force standing on your head with kaleidoscope glasses on and think that it in any way applies to the situation in Syria and the government there. We sent them people to be tortured from Al-Qaeda. We gave them our detainees to soften them up in the extraordinary rendition program. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's... The dude may be terrible, but he's not a terrorist.
Yeah.
I mean, what does that authorization specifically...
Well, it includes Al-Qaeda and all subsidiary organizations and anything that had anybody that had anything at all to do with 9/11 and international terrorism, I guess, by Cheney's reading. And, again, there's no way that applies to Assad.
Yeah, but is that what covers ISIS,
yeah,
too?
Obviously, because, well, they're not exactly part of Al-Qaeda, but, you know, we invaded Iraq under that, and ISIS was a result of that, so you could, again, standing on your head and looking through kaleidoscope glasses, see that that's applicable.
Yeah, and that, as kaleidoscopy as it may be, it still makes more sense than Assad's government.
Yes.
So, would the early administration bombing of that airbase that was empty and then easily fixable the next day, in response to that first gas attack, you're saying that was by no means covered by...
No, that was not covered at all. That was... I don't even know what they would say that allowed for that. I mean, there's the old Obama thing that was responsibility to protect, but... Sorry.
To protect...
Civilians. Just the R2P thing that was the reason that they attacked Libya. It's like, oh, we're trying to protect civilians. Are you now? Are you really?
So they do... So the logic behind that is just any civilian anywhere?
Notionally, yes. But, again, weapons of mass destruction and take things up to a second... new level, I guess, even for the Trump administration.
That's pretty interesting.
But, yeah, the same people who responded to that attack with, what was it, like 20 cruise missiles launched from F-15s, from what I've heard, were the same people who were deploying snipers against... If they were militant, they were burning tires and throwing rocks, so not exactly a stand-up military force.
Wait, what are you referring to?
Oh, Israel. Israel that night attacked the T-4 airbase in Syria.
So, the logic behind that is that Israel did that in response to the chemical attack?
Yes, but I think it was just an opportunistic attack because at least two Iranians were killed there at the airbase.
Yeah. Do you think... I mean, I'm kind of surprised. I mean, America, as far as we know, hasn't done anything.
No, they were talking about it, yesterday? Or today, probably.
It's kind of like punishing a dog, though. Like, at some point, the dog doesn't know what it's being punished for if you wait too long on this.
Yeah.
Like if we wait a few weeks and then we're like, oh, yeah, that was for the chemical attack. They're like, but we've killed so many civilians since then. Which ones are we...
Just stop killing civilians. So, yeah, there's just a lack of consistency, which kind of hamstrings the whole effort. And it makes ploys on either side just transparent.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we sidetracked this conversation far enough.
I don't remember what we were talking about. Oh, yeah. Bolton. Presidential power. Yeah, I think... No, I think we talked about the expanding nature of presidential power in national mm-hmm. security. Do you know of anything else? I mean, presumably he wants to... have carte blanche for the president when it comes to everything. Yeah. So, if they couldn't do something to North Korea, they would not seek congressional approval. I feel comfortable saying.
Yeah, I don't think that guy would do anything but prank call Congress.
Well, supposedly he's a bully type. So he'd probably try and like...
See, that's the common theme with all of those advisors. They said the same thing about Addington. Like, he was just a sarcastic asshole to people he didn't like and who disagreed with him.
Yeah. Well, kind of makes sense, right? I mean...
I guess you kind of have to be an asshole to think that way. And to think that you're so right that nobody else should even have an opinion about anything.
Yeah, especially to be, like, a leader of that kind of thought. You know, to be a trailblazer
and just being a giant dick.
Yeah, you kind of have to be, yeah, the big dick to lead the way, I guess.
Alpha! That's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so...
I found an article talking about his and Peck's involvement here in Wisconsin. I wonder if he's going to continue operating and managing that from within the White House. That seems like a huge conflict of interest.
Yeah, so we were going to talk about the Senate race in Wisconsin later in the show. But, of relevance to this discussion is John Bolton has a PAC. It kind of has been brought up in the news recently as having ties to Cambridge Analytica. And they are, as far as anyone can tell, they're still operating. They are still a thing. They're still seeking contributions from the Koch brothers, I believe it was mentioned in that article. And they are still spending money on candidates, notably Nicholson in the Republican primary for the Wisconsin Senate seat held by Tammy Baldwin. And I don't... Isn't that like a Hatch Act thing?
Yeah. Isn't it? I thought you'd think so. But he's not an... It's not an elected position. It's not even a political appointment, but... Hey! Sorry. Yeah, cat my troubles. Cat is trying to interrupt this broadcast. He's got a propensity for trying to lay on the keyboard lately like that, because he knows it'll stop me from using the computer.
Does he want to use the computer?
I think so, but maybe.
He likes watching cat videos, I imagine. So, I guess... See, this is why we need the legal advisor. The Hatch Act, I thought, applied to... I mean, the National Security Advisor wouldn't be... Isn't that a political appointee?
Yes, he is a political appointee, so yeah. Must apply. That was basically made for high-level executive positions like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's... I thought that's what it was for.
Again, Ivan is keeping me from fact-checking.
The cat likes fake
prohibits
news.
Employees in the executive branch of the federal government exempting from engaging in certain forms of... And that's where the preview ends. Political activity.
I mean, there must be, like... Is there just too much outrage in the world that no one's caught this one yet? Because I haven't seen anything about this. and it strikes me as...
Well, this is like the use of federal funds, federal money in for political purposes. Like, if you used federal money, like if John Bolton to wage some kind of PR stunt, put a bunch of MAGA hats and cops and put them in front of cameras, that would be a clear violation, I think.
Well, so I'm guessing, so, like, the clear example during this administration so far of breaking that was, and I believe she even was cited by ethics.
Kellyanne.
Ethics council or whatever. Was Kellyanne. And she, I think it's because she was speaking on the Roy Moore, Doug Jones race as
position advisor or counselor to the president.
So presumably the John Bolton loophole is that he's not raising money as the national security advisor. He's doing that off the clock,
but that's
I guess.
24-hour-a-day position, so important. Yeah, it just strikes me as terrible on so many different levels.
Yeah, and it's not like... because when you're talking about raising funds, so it's one thing if he's like, in private,
just some saying, asshole author.
I like this dude in this race. I like Kevin Nicholson. Like, hey, he's talking to some major Wisconsin donor, and he's like, hey, I like Kevin Nicholson. I think
sure,
he's
God bless America and bless your opinion, but whatever.
But the raising of money and then the spending of the money on candidates, I don't know how you can separate that from...
Right, what is he?
The person's
position. You might have to dip out of these fundraiser meetings to, like, go answer national security questions from the president or receive reports from below. I mean, it's just a problematic position to be in.
Yeah. Well... John Bolton's a problematic individual, so... Alright, we are back with another grown-up book report. Although it's maybe not the most grown-up, because it's actually a comic book. Or graphic novel, I should say. Probably graphic novel is a better way to put it. Makes it sound more sophisticated. And this is actually a trilogy, which I purchased... Well, actually received as gifts out of order. And read them out of order. But they're still really good. And since it's based on history, it didn't really ruin the ending. So these are called March... And there's March Book 1, March Book 2, and March Book 3. And they are essentially an autobiographical account of John Lewis, the congressman from Atlanta, right?
I believe so.
Yeah. An autobiographical account of his life, obviously focused on his civil rights work. And the third book pretty much ends... it's primarily focused on his work during the 60s. It doesn't really get into, like, his congressional life. The first book does start with him as a kid and kind of, like, learning some lessons. But most of it takes place in, I'd have to look back exactly, but late 50s into the 60s, into the late 60s. It's really, really dense with information. If you were so inclined to look at it more as a historical document than art, I suppose, because it is nonfiction, you know, I mean, that is a way to look at it. It's just like if he wrote an autobiography, you know, it's a primary source. And it has tons of names, like he's just constantly, like, meeting people, and sometimes it'll tell you what this person went on to do. Like, I first met them at a meeting in, you know, Nashville in 1962, right. And this person, you know, I mean, there's names that stuck out to me.
pretty much anyone involved in the civil rights during that time period.
Wait, did he meet Cesar Chavez in that time frame?
No. This, well, not in the, it's not mentioned in the book, at least. Where did, Chavez was out of California, right?
Yeah.
So this is primarily the South, Southeast. There are some scenes of him kind of networking and fundraising, which you can really see how he's one who became a congressman. Because he would be someone they'd send to, like, Philadelphia to talk with, like, let's say, I don't know if this is the exact one, but, like, a Philadelphia chapter of the NAACP or something like that. Where they were northern, they were often more prosperous African Americans, and they'd help fund these battles in the South. But, you know, I mean, yeah, those everyone's from Martin Luther King down. Is in here. And but what really strikes me about the book is, as a comic book fan, and I oh, first let me give credit. It's written by John Lewis and Andrew Aiden, who I think may have worked in his congressional office, but I have to look at the bios. Yes, Andrew Aiden is an Atlanta native and serves as John Lewis's digital director and policy advisor. He's also worked on re-election campaigns for him, and he's a dude with a bunch of degrees, apparently. And then the artist is Nate Powell, and I will get to the art in a second because it's noteworthy. The main thing that strikes me about the book is the, because again, this is three sizable graphic novels. I mean, this second one here is 180 pages, I think.
Wow, that's longer than most of the Dark Knight trilogy.
Yeah, the first one's 120, and I don't have the third one on me. But yeah, they're lengthy and again detailed a lot of the names, but they really get into, you know, almost every kind of. I'm sure there's not so much poetic license, dramatic license in terms of fudging details, but you know, I'm sure it doesn't get into like the minutiae of every single minute of every single day he had, obviously. But it really gets into a lot of noteworthy events. Gives you his personal context, gives you some broader context, gives you reasons why it was important, why it was symbolic. Then gives you an after, like, the effects it had. One of the main plots of book two are these, I think they called them freedom rides, where they would get a bunch of black people, because there was a Supreme Court case that challenged, they won, any races, you know, right to ride, like, interstate buses. Greyhounds and that type of thing.
Jesus Christ, I can't believe that was a thing.
Yeah. And, but the problem was, this is kind of a recurrent theme throughout this. I mean, I definitely learned a ton, just broadly speaking, I didn't know most of this. And we'll get to my kind of emotional take on it. But historically, I didn't know a lot of what's in this book. And so, like, in that case, I mean, the front cover of March, Book 2, is from that plot line. And there is a picture of a Greyhound, in fact, it is a Greyhound, I can even see the little Greyhound symbol, bus with smoke billowing out of it, flames coming out of the windows.
Right, because the buses got bombed, didn't they?
Yep. Black people, because they'd get to this one town and then they'd get attacked. Black people running out of it, trying to grab luggage. There's a woman sitting in front afraid. And in the background on the other side, you can see angry silhouettes of white people with, like, a gun, a bat, a crowbar.
Some rope.
It's horrific. It was murderous.
I mean, that's an appropriate adjective for what was happening around those times.
Oh, yeah. Book one, Well, let me just the bus thing. The problem was is that just because the Supreme Court said something doesn't mean there weren't going to still be murderous mobs of people trying to stop it, including police and sheriff-led mobs and actions. Or they would, like, talk with, like, the local Klan leader and agree not to show up for 15 minutes.
All right. Give you guys a really head start.
Yeah, yep. And, you know, and then they'd, like, arrest them for their own safety, but then treat them like shit in prison. Yeah, it was bad. Book one talks about how he kind of got into it, his education. And then lunch counter sit-ins in Nashville. Book three is primarily, and I suppose this is what it all led to, is what the book's kind of about here. Book three is primarily about the Selma March. Or the march on...
From
Selma? From Selma, right?
To Montgomery?
One way to the Montgomery. Other. Yeah. Whatever you call it. March. Selma March. The thing, like, I didn't know about that is that John Lewis got it, like, whopped in the head by, I think, a police baton right before the march, like, the day before, or the first day, or something like that. And he was hospitalized, and the doctors wouldn't let him go on the full march, because it took place over days, you know?
Mm-hmm. It was like 60 miles.
Yeah, so he'd get driven back to Selma each day to sleep in the hospital and get checked up on. I mean, he was in severely concussed and had brain... I mean, not...
Well, maybe brain damage.
Long-term brain damage, but head damage. Yeah. He had head damage. Yeah, and it's just full of these. But the main thing that struck me about the series was the excellent storytelling, from the art to the writing. And I'm guessing that's why John Lewis has this other guy in here who's probably just a good narrative writer. Because it really flows well. I mean, I've read a lot of comic books of all kinds, not just superhero, obviously, in my day, and this, honestly, is one of the best. It has pages with just a few words, because they're making an emotional impact. It has just good, visual storytelling, you know, with your panels, the art. You know, you don't even need words a lot of the times, and it's really telling. The excellent use of shadows. It's all black and white. It's super good. I mean, this artist, the characters look different. I know that's kind of like a weird thing to say, but if you go pick up an average comic book, a lot of people don't draw faces well. They don't differentiate them. This guy not only draws faces to differentiate from each other, but some of these are historical figures, and you know what they look like. And you see them right away in here, and you know who it's supposed to be. Like, oh, that's Rosa Parks. That's Martin Luther King. And so on. Even just him drawing, like, a young John Lewis, it still looks like John Lewis, even though it's a 6-year-old, or however old he's supposed to be. And the amount of angry, violent, murderous mobs of white people and the emotional impact of seeing that over and over again through these books. Like, this person draws it really well. They're scary. They are frightening. They make you have a lot of feels.
Like a visceral reaction to it, huh?
Yes, yeah. And it's especially that second book with the buses. The third book with the march had the police. It was mostly police who were kind of beating up on people. The sheriff and all that. But in the second book with the just random mobs, they're just people who got together, probably organized by like a local Klan dude, but I don't know. You know, they weren't wearing hoods or anything.
Right.
It's almost scarier, actually. I would argue it's much scarier.
Right, like they're not even bothering to hide their faces.
There's this, I'm opening here to this page. It's like a young... This is like horrifying.
They're actually, so they also, because there are a lot of white people that joined in on these freedom rides.
Sure.
Kind of as...
Like Bernie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, did he do them?
I know he was arrested in Selma, probably on the march.
Oh, in Selma, okay. I had a teacher in high school, a white teacher, who was in the Selma march. She was super cool. But yeah, I'm opening this page where there's like a white guy who went on this freedom ride, just getting pummeled. WAP, crunch, nigger lover, filthy communists, this is how we do around here. You ain't gonna integrate this county. Nigger lovers, we've gotta get up out of the lot and up the street. Come on, harder, get 'em. Oh wait, sorry, that last bit, we gotta get up out of the lot. That was John Lewis talking. I was just reading everything. But yeah, get them. Get them eyes. There's like, they're like attacking someone's eyes, like trying to poke them out.
Jesus.
It's, I mean, they beat this guy. I don't know if they killed him, but they beat him bloody. Oh, here's a picture of John Lewis getting pummeled in the head again. I'm surprised he's like, doesn't have a like degenerative brain failure at this CTE. Point or anything. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's over 80, mm-hmm. right? And I've seen him in interviews within the past year or two. He's very coherent.
Way more coherent than Trump.
Yeah, definitely. So anyways, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot historically to parse through here. There's the groups he was a part of. Like, what were they? Like, student nonviolent... I don't know, something. Oh, the one last thing I'll talk about the narrative is that they also, the books sort of lead up to Obama becoming president. So I think it's the first book. There's this, it's all kind of a flashback, and I think it runs through book two, although it might be him talking to different people. I don't know if it goes into book three. But like, I'm looking in book two right here. It's like Barack Obama's inauguration. And so he's kind of telling us as a flashback to kids who came to his office to look at, you know, to come see the office of the legendary John Lewis, like these, you know, kids from his district with like their mom. And, it's like the morning of the inauguration, right? And so he's kind of telling them this. Which is ridiculous how long it is. I'm sure this part didn't actually happen, because it's like, you just talked for 3 hours to these kids? Like, didn't you have somewhere to be?
Yeah, you'd be surprised how much free time congressmen have.
Yeah, but the inauguration happens at a set time, you know. Anyway, but, so he's telling them kind of like his story to kind of inspire them, you know. It's like, I was a kid like you, blah, 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 blah. But it puts in perspective Barack Obama's election and becoming president in a way that, I mean, as a white Midwesterner raised in the 90s and, you know, 80s, 90s, and today, it's hard for me to wrap my head around. And even more so now that Obama has been president. And whether you love him, hate him, or are somewhere in between, it's just, he's a political, historical creature now. It's hard in 2020 to look in retrospect, to look at it from the eyes of someone like, say, John Lewis.
Sure.
And it puts an emotional impact around that happening, that being able to happen, I think, is the bigger thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's not so much, you know, who Obama was as much as that it could happen. That it, I mean, because you're reading through this book and you're like, it couldn't have happened in 1966.
Certainly not. They barely elected a Catholic.
I mean, it's, he wouldn't have been, like, I mean, they were bloody black people on buses. I mean, they were,
right,
you know, in beating the shit out of them.
United States, people were getting bombed off of buses.
Ugh. Yeah. The last thing, I think this is a lot better, the last thing I say about when I, the impact the book had on me and the takeaway was the realization because, you know, you get emotionally invested in this, and it hits you hard. I mean, I teared up in this book multiple times in these books, like, easily. And that realization that this was, what, only 50 years ago,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, living memory.
There's people still alive. I mean, they'd be old, granted, if they were an adult. But they're kids.
Right, they saw that.
There's Jeff Sessions.
I was reading earlier somewhere, it was like 70 people on average a month were getting lynched in the South, and that's just reported sources. So those people lived with like low-level ethnic cleansing, basically.
Oh, yeah. In the March book, in the book three that talks more is focused on the Selma March, they talk about, like, the multiple murders that happened, trying to get... Because the whole point of that was to expand voting in Alabama amongst black people. That's what it was all about, was registering people to vote in Selma. And so there are people from around the country who would go down there, and there are different tactics for this. Some would be to just kind of... just flat out just try and register people. But then there were like reading requirements. So you had to be able to pass a literacy test if you were black. I think theoretically you had to do it if you were white too, but they would make it really easy for the white people because it was up to the local official.
Right, like point to the apple.
Yeah. Or they like just say like, well, you're white, you must be able to read or something like that.
Probably couldn't anyway.
And so there'd be some people who'd go down there and try and teach. They're like, fine, that's what we have to do, then we're going to fucking learn to read. And so there'd be volunteers who would help teach people. There's all types of activities, but anyways, there were multiple murders of not just black people. Like, there were two kids from New York or something. I think they were Jewish, but I'm not positive about that. It doesn't really matter, but the local sheriff murdered them. Like, the law enforcement murdered people coming to help black people vote.
Hmm.
It's, and I'm pretty sure there's never been justice for it. Everyone knew it. They even found the bodies, and I think the FBI investigated, but I don't think they ever charged anyone. They couldn't prove it, but... Or maybe they didn't want to prove it. Maybe LBJ needed some Southern votes.
Yeah,
I don't know.
To say.
It's all very convoluted and depressing.
Yeah, some severe compromises were made, and a lot of people just got written off because of it.
Yeah. It's, I don't know how someone could read a book like this and not, I don't know, not be more concerned about issues of race in our country.
Yeah, it's certainly hasn't gotten... Well, I mean, I will say it's objectively better than it was then, but I don't know. Now it's the same kind of economic and social violence without the physical violence, so there's no reason to viscerally react to it. People are getting slowly pushed out instead of just, I guess, beaten in the streets.
Yeah, I would say that the big change from then to now... So, I mean, obviously there's been a big change in the practical rights, day-to-day
sure.
lives. I mean, just, you know, I mean, for as bad as it may be, it was, as you said, objectively worse. But I think there's a separation between perception, especially amongst white people, of the problem.
Sure.
And... So even though the problem has gotten less, it hasn't gone away. It's like that, you know, like racism died with Barack Obama becoming president.
It didn't.
But people think that. Even people who are concerned about racism might think that. Or something along those lines.
Interesting parallel. Like, violent crime has been going down since, like, basically the 60s and 70s, down to, like, the historic lows that we enjoy today. But people are increasingly armed and scared of it. Which...
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe along racist reasons.
Oh, very, very, yes.
It's like, well, if they're going to have the right to vote, then I got the right to bear arms. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's like, it's that disparity between what people, how bad people think it is and how bad it is, or I guess people think it's not that bad, I should say. Like, it's interesting if you think about the 60s, most black people, although I think there was a little bit of a classist disagreement on this, but most black people probably would have been like, shit's really bad. White people would have been separated. Some would have been kind of probably, you know, more liberal, conscientious of these things, and would have said it's bad. Then there have been white people who would have been obviously supportive of it, you know, the people bombing buses and the people voting for murderous sheriffs, you know, those people. How many white people were like, there is no problem? Or, you know, like, there's no, like, there wouldn't have been ignorance of it. You might have supported it, but you wouldn't have been ignorant of
what was going on.
The right. Racism.
I mean, it's like, you can see that visceral reaction in front of your eyes, right? Or the visceral, you know, reasons.
Yeah. Hmm. It just strikes me as, like, there's... Yeah, somehow we got to a point where there's people who are, like, you know, like, no opinion on the subject type.
Well, and then you know, like, you kind of have to guess...
What's
like,
the big deal?
What portion of those people are people that are just okay with it, and another group of people who are also scared that they will be thrown under the bus with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, because those white people similarly lived to their... Like, I assume you're talking about the people in the community. They just couldn't get up and move as easily as, you know, you can today, sort of.
Yeah, like a peer mm-hmm. pressure type thing. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think that's really important today.
Yeah, it is.
Actually, because if you still have segregation,
we absolutely do.
Even if it's not institutional, well, it's kind of institutionalized, but you know what I mean. You know, this community over here is going to be mostly white, and it just even if there's a kind of, you know, if you could like put a start point at it, like a minority of white people who are kind of virulently racist, it's like there's a peer pressure to spread it. There's like a tribalism to it that I could see a lot of people kind of just maybe deep down inside they don't buy into it, but they don't say anything when the jokes are made.
Right. You know? Because everybody's laughing.
They don't stop someone if, you know, a person of color moved into the neighborhood and were being treated poorly.
Right. They didn't stop the Klansmen from installing that upside-down artwork in their front lawn.
I know of someone who lives in Fort Atkinson, in Wisconsin here, who has... I mean, she's white, but she has biracial kids because her husband's black. And she recently, within the past couple weeks, was harassed. Fort Atkinson.
Christ.
I mean, you don't have to go... Like, I know of other stories, you know, just because my partner's from Fort Atkinson, you know, from, like, further back. It's like, well, okay, that's
the... Yeah, end. Sure. So like, the one poor black family in my... When I was going to school, Melinda, she and her family got pushed out of town and ended up having to move away basically because of the racism.
That's so disheartening. All right. Well, on that note, hope everyone understands. Still happening.
Right? I mean, we've made progress, but...
In fact, I think, don't we have something in the next segment about that? Yeah. All right. We'll be back with closing thoughts. All right. So, you want to... What do you want to start with? I mean, we just talked about racism. You want to just go right into that one? Just to get it out of the way.
Sure, I'm not sure what there is to say about it, but there was a recent racist incident here at Beloit College. Somebody wrote some, like, KKK forever and F people of a certain demographic, although not expressed in nearly those terms.
Yeah, I just think it's noteworthy.
Right, and it's at Beloit College, which is notionally a super-duper liberal institution. But, you know, it's still here in Wisconsin in 2018 that this happened.
Yeah.
Is it people from Beloit? I don't know. I mean, there were Trump signs. I'm not saying that people are automatically racist if they support Trump, but there are some very conservative parts of Rock County.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, doesn't really matter who it was. It just, it happened here. Someone
doesn't
who's
matter.
Either from Wisconsin or spending most of their time here. So.
Or maybe some, it makes it slightly weirder if they visited Beloit College just to spray graffiti.
Yeah, I suppose it's cold enough to the, close enough to the border, you could blame it on people from Illinois. Like we do for so many of our problems in southern Wisconsin.
Darn traffic. People from Illinois are to blame.
Hey. That's a great segue into problems from Illinois causing trouble here. In our, I think it was our second episode, if I could be wrong, the early episode, we talked about America's PAC. And they're being supported by this guy, Uline, from Illinois, known as...
No, he's from Wisconsin originally.
Oh, is that why he's obsessed with Wisconsin politics? I figured it was just because it was a nearby battleground state that was ripe for the plucking. So we talked about in that early episode, his incredible monetary support, just in terms of how much money coming from one guy.
Yeah, he's trying to take over the role of the Mercers and be like the arch donor for the.
Well, they called him in that article in the Wisconsin State Journal about the outside money being spent in the Wisconsin Senate race. They called him the Coke of Illinois. Not something I'd ever want to be called. But yeah, he's given millions already to Republican primary senatorial candidate Kevin Nicholson, who we brought up in the first segment because he's also been given something, I think the article said about $850,000, if I recall, from John Bolton's PAC. But it was something like, what, $3.5 million from the two Uline PACs?
Yeah. Like, just nuts money. Like, they're dumping I think the article also said that this is so far the most expensive Senate primary in the country.
Yeah, And I mean, they said it might even end up being unique in the history of all Senate campaigns. There's just so much money coming in from the outside. Although the article danced around the subject, but it sort of implied that almost all of that was on the Republican side.
It was kind of like that journalistic neutral ambiguity, like, oh, this is happening on the left, or this may or may not be happening for leftist PACs, too, but it didn't specify any examples.
Yeah. I'm sure she is raising money from outside the state. I mean, there's no Senate race that wouldn't have any money from outside the state.
Sure. I haven't seen any leftist organizations come out specifically in favor of her, like Our Revolution or Brand New Congress or Wolfpack or anybody else.
Yeah.
Which kind of strikes me as strange. I mean, maybe she accepts corporate PAC money, but her record amongst the Senate is relatively progressive.
I would say it's in the upper tier. I mean, I think...
Yeah,
what?
It's all kind of marginal, because she also voted for that budget, so whatever.
But she didn't originally, right?
No, she did. She's always been in favor of those increases to the military budget. Or at least has never voted against them.
I think that's because of military spending in the state thing. She doesn't strike me as a
in general pro-military person? You know what I mean?
No, she's typically not. She doesn't really have... She has that blasé democratic foreign policy, which amounts to nothing, but a lot of the military spending was tied up in other programs, and it was kind of seen as a compromise because they notionally increased social spending, as they called it, in line with the military increases. Yes.
Well, and almost and more importantly, they didn't
cut people hostage.
Social spending, which
yeah, they didn't
is
cut.
A legitimate threat given the Republican majorities across the board.
Sure.
I agree that it's she. I mean, if the Democrats as a broad group don't, like, want to not fail in November.
Like, this is their chance to really refine their message
and it's not...
Yeah, show, demonstrate their organizational support.
Yeah, and it's not just about winning, because, you know, what? They want to win the majority in the Senate and the House, and the Senate's going to be harder to win. But part of winning the Senate would be maintaining the seats you already have, of which Baldwin is one, and there are polls that favor her a decent amount, which, yeah, there's going to be discrepancies in the polls, but that tells me that it's not like she's being, she's like an underdog by any means.
No, certainly not. She has so much name recognition. I mean, the only thing that I could see that they're going to hammer on her or hammer her about is the response to the VA center in Tacoma.
What's the basis of that? Isn't it like someone wrote her office a letter at some point?
Well, somebody wrote her letters and they tried approaching her office about the situation and she wasn't as responsive as they expected.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's kind of fair, but because that office in Tacoma was continuing the dangerous practices for some time after authorities were notionally aware of it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of problematic.
Yeah, it for sure is, and, you know, her and her office's response might not have been sufficient. It might be a legitimate criticism. The problem I have with that criticism is that, was she the only person notified? I mean...
Well, and my problem with that is that she's one of the few senators who's even talking about the opioid epidemic and its, you know, policy consequences.
Yeah. Oh, she's definitely she cares. Domestically, with her policies. I would put her in the caring category. And it's it said in the article there's one veteran group defending her where there's another one attacking her for those issues.
Yeah, veterans are as divided as the rest of the country between progressive and conservative values.
You know, the thing is that I can't help but think when I see something like that, is one of these veteran groups even actually veterans?
I mean, all of these political organizations anymore, you have to question whether or not there's even an organization there. It's just a straw man organization with, like, hundreds of thousands of dollars and, like, one guy in a very active Twitter account.
Yeah, just a bank account.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Nicholson, we were talking about him early on, he seems to be the main beneficiary of this outside spending so far, by at least this report in the Wisconsin State Journal. That Volkner seems to be getting a...
Volkner?
Sorry.
Is that her name?
Yeah, there's no L. You're right. I thought it was pronounced Volkner, but I don't know. Doesn't matter, she's probably not going to win.
She's been a Tea Party Republican in the States for the last decade. One of Scott Walker's sycophants.
You know, it's interesting, though. I don't know what this means. Because I've heard ads for her that have been touting, like, her work in the state Senate with
you know, the Walker administration. But at least in this article, it says, Vukmir has amassed support from hundreds of GOP elected officials and activists, which, again, something I never want said about me, including State Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald and former RNC Chairman Reince Priebus. It does not say Walker there.
Interesting. Yeah, because it, like, puts her squarely in that Waukesha clique.
Yeah, and I wonder if she
is trying to distance herself from
him. I'm thinking more he's trying not to pick a winner, or, you know, show too much favorability to one or the other.
Yeah, I mean, if he wants to be governor, he's going to have to work with whoever gets elected.
Yeah, they're going to have to campaign together, yep. I would think, at least. It'd be awkward for them not to.
Well, I mean, even beyond, like, endorsements, like, he's seen as being, or she's seen as being tied to him.
Yeah.
So I don't know how that bodes for our gubernatorial election later this year.
I don't know.
I mean, this is going to, that Senate primary could be a litmus test for how the conservatives are feeling across the state.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'd definitely agree with that. And, although, but here's the thing. That's where the problem comes in with this outside, it doesn't even have to be outside spending, I guess, but just with so much spending, and in the case of Nicholson, so much spending coming from mostly one entity, which is one billionaire from Illinois. And if you have that much more spending on advertising, is it a referendum on how conservatives are feeling, or it's just name recognition? Especially in a primary.
Yeah, just a popularity contest. Well, I think I just wrote the only advertisement Sammy Baldwin needs to write. It's like, do you want your choice dictated by this guy and all of his millions of dollars, or do you want someone who will fight for Wisconsin?
Yeah.
I really hope that she's not taking corporate money, because that could ruin this whole effort.
We have looked at her, not recently, but we have looked at her fundraising in the past, and
her financial disclosure was one of the cleanest that I've seen.
Yeah, there weren't big red flags. I mean, I don't, you know, she might get desperate, who's to say, but it's not an ongoing issue with her, at least.
You see, that whole notion that Democrats need to be desperate, and when they're desperate, go to the corporations for, you know, this largesse, it's just so counterintuitive to me. If somebody is trying to hammer you with money, you would you attack them. Like, if you just are getting buried beneath paper, you don't go to rock, you go to scissors.
Yeah.
You can't beat paper with more paper. You have to cut through it with ideas and, like, actual political support.
I totally agree, but that doesn't mean...
That is how things are.
Yeah, well, and that, it doesn't mean that's what they... People don't always do the smartest thing, right?
Right.
All right.
What else is that? What else are we talking about?
I think we kind of covered over, I don't know why, I think I have Syria down here twice or something. Oh, Syria tied into Israel-Palestine.
There actually is another development in Syria.
Go ahead.
The Russian foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, apparently directed his ire towards Turkey in the past few days, saying that they need to quit their bastion that they've established in Afrin, in northern Syria. To wit, President Erdogan said, no, we will quit when we're not handing it over to the Syrian government, which is an interesting policy, but we'll see how that plays out.
Wait.
That could just mean that Turkey's just taken a bit of northern Syria and probably are looking to take more.
Well, yeah, so, yeah, that is an interesting way to put it. We're not going to leave this place until it's not going to the Syrian government. But, I mean, then whose would it be?
if it's not the Syrian government.
Are you just going to hang on to that if, like, Assad isn't going to get kicked out? Is that what's happening here?
Hey, but does that also include if Assad was kicked out and there was a new Syrian government? They're like, no, we said Syrian government. They're still the Syrian
government. Well, I think he meant specifically Assad's government.
Yeah, well, maybe.
But, yeah, if they're, maybe if it's kind of putting the finger on the... Yeah, scale towards regime change, but I don't think there's any international appetite or political will for that.
So wait, he didn't... So I guess I'm a little confused. So Turkey also has a problem with Assad now? I thought they were only there...
They've always had a problem with Assad.
Under...
I mean, that's the reason they opened the borders to the refugees after all this started.
Why don't they like Assad?
Political opportunism, I guess.
So they don't really dislike him, they just use it as an excuse.
Yeah.
Okay, so... Yeah, every time we talk about Syria, it's just like so many moving pieces.
Right, you need a wiring diagram and like a... description of what's happening.
I mean, let's even talk about, like, the U.S. So, what? Trump's like, we're pulling... So, wait, that's a couple months ago, then Secretary of State Rex Tillerson are like, here are the five tenets of us leaving Syria, and, you know, if you read into those, it's like, okay, well, that's never going to happen, so we're never leaving Syria. Okay. Not good, but not a surprise, I guess. And then Trump's like, what, last week was that only? He's like, we're leaving Syria.
Right, Mr. I'm not going to telegraph our strategy. Yeah.
But then, a couple days later, there's a chemical attack, which, like, I had to beat down the conspiracy theorist in me. They're like, no, that wasn't just someone trying to get us to stay there. Stop it. Stop saying that.
Yeah, right? It wasn't a convenient false flag. It was an atrocity.
Yeah. Yes, but just to be clear, not saying that. Just... I just always have that dude in the back of my head from watching too much, like, you know, too many movies.
And, you know, people our age are rightly sensitive to accusations of the use or possession of weapons of mass destruction, as they're called.
Yeah.
We should always be skeptical when people are talking about them.
Yeah, and that'll last with our generation forever, really.
Hopefully.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. But anyway, and so then that happens, and then there's talk of military intervention, and then what? So now we're staying there because chemical weapons were used? Like, or we're not... We're still leaving now? Or we're gonna, like, flip the bird on our way out? Or what's happening?
Right, are we going to actually use military force against Assad's government? Because as we mentioned in the earlier segment, that's not exactly covered under any authorized use of military force.
Exactly, yeah. So if... Like, so what are we there for if we are staying, but we're not fighting them, but we're only staying because of what Assad did? And that's just our side, the American side. I mean, right, I think there's the Russians, a similar level of confusion. I mean, we're just to bring up Turkey... Israel just occasionally shoots bombs over in there. They don't have troops on the ground, right?
No troops on the ground, but they use their air force for most of the murder that they conduct.
Yeah, I think I've heard reports of them they occasionally send in. They have, like, some intelligence agents on the ground and shit.
Well, you'd expect that.
Of course, yeah. And then Russia's, like, what, they were leaving, but they haven't left yet? Because then we said we're leaving, and everyone's like, oh, but I'll just give it to Russia. But Russia said they were leaving.
Right, they've been pulling out for over a year now.
See, but I predicted that was just, I think you told me I was wrong for some reason, but that was just an election year. False promise.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know. Yeah, so then Turkey, Iran's just, they're involved because why?
They want access to the Mediterranean.
Extend their zone of influence?
No, they want an alternate route of... Because if Saudi Arabia and the U.S. coalition, like, decided to close the Persian Gulf, I mean, they would have speedboats, but not really any significant military strategic options. So they want to continue access to you know, the Mediterranean in some kind of warm, deep water port.
But for purely military purposes or for trade?
Military and defensive trade, I guess. So.
So then they'd be going overland to Iran?
Yeah, basically over Iraq. Through Syria.
Because is Iraq sort of like a little bit like in Iran's sphere?
Yeah, because like 60% of Iraq is Shiite Muslim, so...
But what's their government's take on things?
They're trying to play both sides, trying to be middle of the road, because they have a huge population and like very deep sectarian divides within their country, so if they try to play to that internationally, there's no good domestic policy outcome from that.
They should just be like, we're the Switzerland of the Middle East.
Yeah, actually, that would be a good strategy for them, but I don't know if that would be sustainable.
That would probably piss both sides off.
And the Americans.
Yeah. Both Shiite and Sunni uniting to be like, no, you have to pick one of us. It's Iran or what, Saudi Arabia. Can't, you know, we're at war. Pick a side. Can't, none of this third option bullshit.
Peace?
Fuck that. Yeah. Well, that's about all I have for the episode. Any final
closing
words?
Thoughts.
Well,
again, it'll be interesting to see what Zuck does in front of Congress. But I don't foresee any other major policy shifts other than, like, that quantum shift that seems persistent in the Trump administration, where the whole thing could just fly apart for no reason at any moment.
I would, if there's one thing to point out to look for in that, would be if any of the senators, I guess, or House members, but mostly senators, bring up a little bit specific of regulation talk, and because Zuckerberg has hinted within the past few weeks that he's open to congressional regulation.
Right, some marginal changes, but they're not talking about putting a safe or any kind of firewall between Facebook and its users. Like David Diane for the past week or so has been on a quest on Twitter to ban personalized ads, which would just absolutely destroy Facebook's entire business model.
Yeah.
So don't look for more privacy protections, but look for some mealy-mouthed proclamations and some politicians trying to avoid getting destroyed in their primaries because of Zuckerberg's largesse.
You know, I saw one of those things on Twitter, and they're like, here's how to find out how you're personally being advertised to.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it was, I went to the Facebook or the Google one, because I saw both posted how you can check that out. And it was like, mostly it was like, no, that's just pretty much who I am. It didn't really surprise me. It wasn't like, oh my God, how did they know this? You know, it was like, I look up shit about comic books, and so, like, YouTube videos and stuff, and so there was likes comic books or something like that.
It's like, well, yeah, I guess that tracks.
You know, it was some political stuff. It was mostly, it didn't really, like, offend me in any way. But there were, like, one or two in there that were like, okay, don't know why they think this, don't know how they got this, don't know why this is a thing. One of them was, like, Bollywood films.
Yeah, I had that too. And also basketball.
Basketball.
Yeah, for some odd reason, Google thinks I really like basketball when I'm just trying to follow the Bucks scores.
Oh, well, you are trying to follow. I mean, I don't know. Do you look up anything about Bollywood? I don't know. I've never watched. I've never used my Google account to search for anything about it. I don't think I've ever even watched things on YouTube about it.
I have no interest in Bollywood. Like, the whole production of Bollywood movies is just terrible to me. I don't really like musical movies, so...
I don't think I've ever even seen advertisements about it.
I don't get like promoted videos. I don't.
Yeah, neither of us speak Urdu or Hindi, so I assume you haven't searched Google for any Hindi or India-related words. I mean, I guess I kind of look up stuff about India, but I don't know why that paints.
Yeah, what? Bollywood, why is that Bollywood?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, I mean, I occasionally might look up a little thing about, you know, I'm not saying I've never done anything to do with India involving Google, but not Bollywood.
No.
Yeah, it's weird. It's creepy. I don't think I deleted it, though.
I did. I also deleted the basketball thing. It's like, actually, Google, I'm not interested in that.
Yeah, I don't think I deleted any of them. I don't really care. Honestly, I don't even notice targeted advertising. I have trained myself very well to not look at ads. I don't notice them, I don't see them, I don't.
Yeah, I've got like 3 different ad blockers on my Chrome, so.
I don't even know if I have. I'm not even sure if I have an ad blocker on here. I mean, there's probably a pop-up blocker, of course.
Yeah, well, there's one internally, but you gotta add like AdBlock Plus, and I also added a script blocker to really parse those advertisements that try to get in.
I mean, I don't see the stuff on, on Twitter. I don't see that much in the way of ads, at least when I'm on my phone on Twitter.
Yeah, I get the ads on Twitter and the mobile thing, but, yeah, I don't get ads on the website.
Yeah. All right, well, this has been Tell Me What to Think. Remember to like and subscribe and review and comment and click and
share.
Yep, and email us, tweet us. You can find me on Twitter at BloatedNemesis.
And I'm at Green_Weird, WYRD.
And you can email us at TMWTTPOD@gmail.com. I would urge you to message us. Let's talk. Come on the podcast. You can tell us all about your crazy views. And
we will discuss them.
And we might tell you you're crazy, to be honest. But, hey, it would be fun, right? That would be fun. You can tell us we're crazy. We're all crazy. It's okay. Anyways, that's been our podcast. Thanks for listening. Have a good week.
Days of sunny. Days of rain. Destroy the myths that will break our chains. Break your chains!